Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Higher Dimension. I'm your hostess, Phyllis Pricer, and we have a special guest for us this evening. The gentleman's name is Aaron Abrahamson, and his lovely wife might be on with him, too. I'm not sure. But Aaron Abrahamson is a contemporary, or almost contemporary, of Edgar Cayce. He was younger than Edgar Cayce, but he did the same kind of trance readings that Edgar Cayce did. He was born in Denmark and emigrated, to Norway, and he emigrated here when he was a young man, and he comes from a family that was, among many others, persecuted because of their religious affiliation during World War II, and he has written a couple of books. I'll just give you the names of them, but he has written a book about the surviving and the story of his life, The Courage to Survive. And his other books were On Wings of Spirit, which is a life which was guided to discover spiritual gifts, and talked about his journey in learning how to do these gifts and followed by spirit as if Edgar Cayce. He spent a great deal of time doing a lot of soul searching and reading the scriptures to make sure he was doing God's work and not anything else, and then a holiday in heaven. But what we are mainly going to begin with tonight is The Courage to Survive. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
I'm so glad to have you here. This was a wonderful, wonderful story of your personal life about the Jewish family and your brothers and sisters living in Norway before and during the Nazi invasion, etc. And it's a remarkable journey for you and your family. What would you like to talk about along these lines tonight?
Well, I would like to talk about my journey from Norway to this country and so on.
Well, go for it. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You came as a young man.
Yeah, well, you know, it was in 1940, in January, that I left for America, and I was 18 years. I traveled alone. That was the first time I have been away from my home.
Right.
And like I said, I was traveling alone, and I was more than scared. And in fact, I was petrified because I hardly knew the language. The English language.
Right.
And when I came to this this country, I'd heard on the ship that in America everybody is so busy they are not gonna help you. And so when I registered at the place where I was gonna stay, I saw a little sign on the left that help yourself, and I thought, my goodness, they are even advertising that they are not going to help me. And of course, well, you know, I didn't know, and later on, I found out they were giving away some free material. So
right.
Help yourself what you needed.
How old were you when you came over?
18.
18.
Yeah, and it was difficult for me to eat out.
Of course.
For I didn't know what the menus said or meant, you know.
Right.
So all I could do was to point to something that... and I hoped I liked it, you know. so that's the way it was. I wanted to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I learned it was I went to the movies
three,
four times a week. And, you know, and at that time, I could go to a movie and see three features. Two newsreels and a couple of cartoons for 10 cents. I used to stay there all day.
Of course you could.
and that was the first time I saw a cartoon with Bugs Bunny and with Fudd.
Elmer Fudd.
Yeah. And I was enraged because here that rabbit was chasing. It's just an old man, and I was ready to lecture the audience until I realized I don't know the language. But when the invasion came, you know, the Nazis occupied Norway,
mm-hmm.
and the money I had, I had letters of credit,
right,
which I could draw on,
mm-hmm.
and when the invasion started, I didn't have any money to live on, so an older brother came over on the last ship, and he had some money he gave me, and then in order for me to work, I had to immigrate.
Right.
Otherwise, they would send me
back if they found
out that I was working. So I went to Cuba.
You had to go out of country at that time. You couldn't stay in country. You had to go out and come back in.
That's right.
Okay.
So I went to Miami, took a boat to Cuba, and back to Miami the next day. And then I took the bus from Miami to California.
Mm.
It was 5 days on the bus. No air conditioning.
Oh, no. In those days, they didn't have air conditioning.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I remember those days, my dear.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I remember being in school without air conditioning. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Must be terrible. But
we survived. I mean, how many thousands of years were we on this earth without air conditioning?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
But then I went to school in... Los Angeles,
uh-huh.
and I wanted to become an engineer. This was a trade school I was going to.
Right.
But I didn't know enough English to go to college.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have any money, so that was the end of that. But I still had the desire to become an electrical engineer.
Okay.
So one of the instructors at school said that if you want to be an engineer, you have to know mathematics.
Okay.
So I went to night school, mm-hmm. learned mathematics for about a year and a half, and then I got into the Navy, and I got into their radar program, which at that time was the top secret.
Right.
And after that time, about 3 years in the Navy, I was separated and I looked for a school. I found one in California. I was separated in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the train back to California. 4 years later, I had a degree in electrical engineering.
Mm.
And I met Doris... About four or five months before I graduated, and that September of 1950, we were married. And we have been married for 57 years.
And you're still with that lovely lady.
Oh, you better believe it.
You knew a good one when you saw one, right?
Oh, yes. And then, in my work career,
yes.
I was at one time with a 10-man scientific research team,
mm-hmm.
to determine the feasibility to mm-hmm. send a manned expedition to the moon and bringing the crew and the vehicle back safely.
Isn't that wonderful? So you really worked in aerospace?
Oh, yeah, yeah, for 20 years, yeah.
Oh, how wonderful.
And that program was just the beginning of the Apollo program.
Right.
That was in 1961.
Right. That was an exciting time.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, very.
Much more so.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I had a very meaningful experience with God, which changed my life.
Okay.
And I started to study the Bible and go to church. And after a while, I was teaching the Bible. And then I had the privilege to speak to assemblies, to different groups in the area, in the LA area, and ever so often, in fact, almost every time when I was speaking, I got my attention to one person in the whole audience, and I broke off what I was speaking, and I had my attention to this one person, and another message came out for that person.
So, and just spontaneously.
Yeah. And I was amazed. Doris was amazed. She was in the audience. And after, every time after the meeting was over, these people came to me and said, "How did you know this? I hadn't told anybody about this."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I didn't know that. God knows, and you must have known it." And He used me to tell you and what to do, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this went on for many, many years, 10, 15 years. And then people would come to me, or to Doris and me, for counsel. They would even come personally to our front door, or sometimes they would write in. And or they used the telephone.
Right.
And one time, we had a letter from a young man who was seeking for some advice, some counseling, and so we gave it to him. Then, about 2 or 3 months later, we heard from the same man again. And he had some decision to make, and he needed to have some counsel right away. Well, that was the dark time when I came home from the office, and I was tired and hungry, you know, and. Doris said, "Well, you know that the young man we heard from some months earlier, he needs some counsel right away." "Well," I said, "after we have dinner, we will, I'll think about it. I'll see if we can." And Doris said, "Well, now, Aaron, I'm making dinner now. So why don't you go into the living room and sit in your rocking chair and meditate and see what you can get for him."
Okay.
Well, you know, she was talking in code. What it was, what she meant was, "You are not going to get dinner until you do something for this young man."
Well, that was kind of a real broad code that you didn't quite get right at the time, I take it.
Not right then, but later. Yeah. And so I went into the living room. I sat into the chair and closed my eyes, and I expected just a few moments, me a few minutes of quietness, then see what I could get for this young man. But suddenly, I mean suddenly, I was out of my body.
Uh-huh.
And I found myself standing on the roof on my home.
Uh-huh.
And I looked around, and everything I looked I saw was identical to the way I saw it in real life.
You can uh-huh.
And then I just took off. I stepped into the clouds,
uh-huh.
and I.
How did you know to do that?
Pardon?
How did you know to step into the clouds? Was it something you
know.
Felt?
I don't know. You know, I did it like intuitively or...
Okay. You just knew to do it?
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, without no. really thinking about it. Okay.
Yeah, there was no instruction book or anything else.
No manual.
That's right. Yeah. And so I found myself on a narrow path. And it feels like I was on walking on a cloud or a path, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned left, and then it turned right, and then right in front of me, at a distance, I saw a huge building made out of white marble.
Mm.
And intuitively, I knew this is the Akashic Records.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I had read about it, you know.
Yeah.
From other people, but I had never seen it, and nobody had told me what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I walked closer, and then I found a porch, and I stepped onto the porch, and there were two men waiting for me.
Hmm.
And they said, "So, we have been waiting for you." And so I said, "Well, you know, this young man, he needs some counsel, and I don't know what to tell him.
Mm-hmm.
Can you be of any help?" "Of course," she said, "that's why we are here." So they took me into the library.
Mm-hmm.
That is where the records are.
Mm-hmm.
And this library was huge. I couldn't even see the other end.
Ah, okay.
And the bookshelves were huge.
Mm-hmm.
The books were big.
Right.
And so they took two or three books out of a shelf, and they put it on a big table,
mm-hmm.
and they opened the books and said, "Well, here is something you can tell this young man, and here is something else you can tell the young man." And there were two or three things they told me that I could tell this young man from these three volumes of books. And then they took the books put them back on the shelves, and they marched me out from the library.
Okay.
And I thanked them, and I found my way back on the path, and soon I was standing on the rooftop of my house.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, "Well, I hope that I am still in the rocking chair." So I looked down through the rafters, and
mm-hmm.
there I was still sitting in my rocking chair.
Right.
So I slipped back through my head into my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened my eyes, and I thought, I must have been gone for at least half an hour, if not longer.
Right.
I looked at my watch. It was less than 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
Yeah.
That was quick.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. And so then I heard their delightful voice from Doris saying, "Dinner is ready." That was all I'd been waiting for. Well, during the dinner, I told Doris what had happened, you know, and where I had been. I'd been at the Akashic Record, and I had received the information from my guides, and for this young man, Doris wrote the information and sent it to this young man. We never heard from him again, but I hope that it was helpful for him. Yeah, and then later on, I figured that the information for this young man, my guides had picked up the 3 volumes from his past lives.
Right.
And then he had used that information for this time. And so that worked very, very well, I thought. And so people then they continued to call for counsel and for help, you know. And we were able to help as many as we. That came to us, and then I got so busy with doing readings that I finally I left the aerospace and gave myself full time to do readings. By that time, we had left California and we were now living in Washington State.
Right.
And we had so many requests. In fact, at one time we were booked up for about 2 years. People had to wait 2 years before they got their reading. And
that's impressive.
Oh, thank you. And then we always made a copy, a tape, to send to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we also kept a copy for ourselves, for in time we wanted to do some research.
Right.
Hold it. Yeah, I have to. Sneeze. But no, okay, now everything is fine.
Okay.
And also. We did a reading for an engineer who was working for a very prestigious research company in California, and he told his friend in Tokyo, Japan.
Right.
And so this friend wanted a reading from me. So we did that, and then lo and behold, a request from Japan came in like a floodgate, you know. And we have done, maybe for the Japanese, maybe 700-800 readings.
Wow!
But altogether, we have done about 8,000 readings. But that wasn't only for the life readings. We had done readings on music and color, earth changes. We had done reading for I can't remember all the.
All subjects.
Oh, yes. And also readings for children. We had done hundreds of readings for children. And when there have been many, many parents who had written in to us after the reading mm-hmm. and saying that unless we had that reading, we wouldn't know how to bring up our child.
Really?
For the reading, they gave accurate instruction mm-hmm. what the child would do, and what the child would be talented for, and it has been proven in many, many instances that was correct.
Wonderful.
And we are very thankful for that. Mm-hmm. And so in 1995 it was.
1995.
I had a talk with my guides. By that time, I was on my third set of the guides.
Oh, really? Were you wearing them out?
Well, it wasn't so much that, but the first set of guides I had. One time when I came to the records, they said, "We have bad news for you." What is that? Well, we are going to leave, but you're going to have another set. So I asked them, "Why are you leaving? I sort of like you." And they said, "Well, we have taught you all we know."
Right.
So we have to go on to learn more. So you got another set of guides.
Okay.
And then after several years, mm-hmm. the same thing. They had to go on to learn this additional things. So I was on the third set, and then one time, I knew it was time to stop the readings, for I was getting to have a difficulty in concentrating.
Okay.
For when I went to the records, I had to concentrate very keenly. It was like balancing a light source, a pinpoint light source, on a pin, you know.
Right.
I had to hold that concentration for about 45 minutes or longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, after that time, I knew the mm-hmm. time had come that I had to give up the readings. Because I could no longer concentrate.
For that long period of time.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So we stopped, and even now, after since 1995, we still have people writing or calling or emailing us
mm-hmm.
if we can do a reading for so and so. And I have to tell them that I can't do that anymore, and I really don't know who. But I hear that you do readings, so
yes.
I will recommend you when I get other people asking for readings.
Well, thank you. How very kind of you.
Yeah.
That's very generous of you.
You're welcome.
I wanted to talk to our audience and say, if you have any questions to ask of Mr. Abramson, please feel free to do so. He did a marvelous job. His story is absolutely outstanding, and it's one of survivorship and one of going through innumerable obstacles and relying on faith and trusting his intuition, and that he was doing the right thing and serving man and God in doing this work. It's a lot of people, I think, Aaron, want to to do this kind of work and think that would be lovely, but I think also there is a misperception that it's an easy thing to do. It isn't. It takes it takes a lot of physical energy, emotional energy, and in order to be a rounded person, you also have to be balanced.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Mean, there are people who are gifted intuitively, and they are not grounded, shall we say, or emotionally balanced. And what happens when you, when at least in my experience and hearing from others, if somebody is not well balanced emotionally, and balances their life with you know, fun and work and meditation and physical activity, an imbalance occurs, and it can be extremely detrimental to the physical as well as the mental and emotional well-being.
That's correct. I remember one of the first readings I did was for a young girl, and she had some troubling emotional problems.
Right.
We did the reading. It took about 2 hours to do that reading. And
that's a long
after
time.
After that, I was in bed for about 3 days.
Ah.
Because it was tiring and draining. And so I learned after that, don't overdo it. For early in the career of doing readings, we did 3 readings a day, 7 days a week.
That's a lot.
Too much.
How long does each reading usually take?
Well, they from 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay, that sounds more reasonable, but still.
Yeah, still. But no, I have a correction. It was 5 readings a day.
Oh.
7 days a week.
7 days a week doesn't leave you any time off to play and have fun.
That's right. No, it didn't.
Okay.
But after a while, one of the guides said, if you keep this schedule up, you will be on a collision course in 5 years.
Okay.
So I took the hint, and I slowed down to 3, and then we did only, after a while, we did 10 readings a week. So we had time off to do other things.
Right.
But like you said earlier, there are those who would like to do this work, but it takes commitment. And first of all, they have to decide, why do you want to do it?
Right.
If it is for fame, forget it, you know.
Yeah.
Or for curiosity, you know, stop there. If it is to help people, then that's another story. But even then, you have to use discernment, and you have to understand that it will take a lot of energy out of you.
Oh yeah.
I've heard people say, well, when you're doing readings, it is like you are the conduit, and it's like water flowing through a pipe.
Mm-mm.
So therefore, it shouldn't be taking any energy. And I said, well, you try it, and you let me know how you do. Because it does take energy, a different type of energy.
Well,
but
yes.
Go ahead.
What I was going to say is, yes, I do channeling, and
yeah.
I will tell you that any time that you do something, what happens, I think, and in simple explanation in my mind, okay, is that your body vibrates, being electric energy, your body vibrates at a certain level. And when you start using energy, which is of a higher force, or it goes at a faster rate. And as a result, I think what happens is it puts a stress on your body, because that's not your normal rate of speed, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And because of that, it causes stress.
Okay.
It's like turning on a machine from low to medium to high.
Right.
And if you use it on high too long and too much, you're going to get a machine that burns out. Am I right?
No, you're right. You're right.
So there's a matter of simple common sense here.
Yeah.
Of utilizing yourself, and you can't abuse yourself either. And we have a tendency not to respect our bodies. I mean,
it's
better than it used to be, but we were pretty much told to ignore our bodies, and that's about the worst thing you can do, is ignore your body and the signals it sends.
You have to take care of that machine that you are working in your body.
Yes.
And also, you see, when you do readings or channeling, same thing, I think, you are working on a higher frequency.
Right, exactly.
And things are going faster.
Right.
Much faster. And you are trying to keep up with their increased speed.
Exactly.
And the body isn't used to that velocity, that
higher
speed.
Yeah.
So you get quite tired very fast.
Same
thing if you were running for a long time.
Right.
You get out of breath and you have to rest.
Right.
Same thing, you know. But you are in a different position.
Right.
That is, you are going to find information on a different plane.
Exactly.
Yeah. So those who would like to develop this skill, they, like you said, they have to be grounded. I believe if you have a faith in God,
yes,
that's one that can ground you, so you don't fall for everything and anything, but you can understand that I'm here to seek the truth.
To
help people, and don't be so tied up emotionally tied up with their reading. For example, when I started to do readings, I told Doris, I don't understand these readings. I don't understand the material coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then one time, I met Yulin Casey, the son of Edgar Casey. And he said, well, Aaron, I'll tell you something. The reason why you don't understand it is that the reading isn't for you.
See?
It is for somebody else.
Right.
And so don't get emotionally tied up that you don't understand it, because a lot of things you don't understand, and this is one of the things. And so that was very helpful to me.
Well, yes. And the other thing I think also is that because we are human beings, again, we can also begin to be flattered at the attention. And that we can let our egos start taking first place. To me, you know, that's one of the subtle areas of concern. So that's why I was mentioning that it's very important to have a balanced personality.
Because
in politics and in power and religion, anything that deals with the higher realms, and politics does. You know, there's power in politics.
Sure. Yeah.
That also, everything vibrates at a particular resonance.
Frequency, yeah.
Frequency, yeah. And the thing is, one can get so enamored and thinking so highly of oneself that you really, I'm going to use a word that perhaps is not what I mean, but you can be corrupted.
Oh, yes.
And become egotistical and think you're better. And when that happens, that to me is the seduction, and that's when you tend to abuse it.
Oh, yes. Somebody said that you can be so heavenly minded, you are no earthly good.
Thank you. I love that. You can be so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. Absolutely.
Yeah. And people, they will flatter you, and they will think highly of you, provided you give them a reading they will like.
Right.
And at one time, I did a reading for a young woman, and I touched on one life, but very lightly. And we went on with the reading. And 2-3 years later, this woman came to our house and said, I'm going to stay here until you do the reading of that life you hardly mentioned.
Huh.
And I said, but dear, you aren't ready for that information. So why don't you just leave and come back in 4 or 5 years? No. She was going to stay here. And she stayed in our home for about 2 or 3 days. And finally, I said, well, we'll do the reading for you, but you won't like it. I can't take it. I am mature enough.
Oops.
So we did the reading, and she was devastating. She packed up her goods and left, and we never heard from her again.
Yeah.
So there have been many times when I was doing a reading that I saw a life, but I hardly mentioned it, or sometimes I didn't say anything about it because my guides gave me some discernment what to tell and what not to tell.
What they were ready for and what they were not. That's very important.
Yeah, that's right. And we have found that throughout the years that people saying, well, I'm so spiritually advanced, I can take anything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, then I know they are not.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's ego.
Oh, yeah.
That's ego. But I also mean for the person who does the reading as well, there is that slippery slope to be careful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Because it is so easy to be so important, self-important.
Right.
That after a while, you will say anything to anybody who will come for a reading, and that isn't right.
No, I know a couple of times people have called me and I said, I'm sorry, I apologize, I can't get a thing for you. And then I wonder what my problem is. And maybe they're not ready to hear anything, you know?
The information you had for them, they were not able to absorb or to accept.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had, feelings when I've talked sometimes to people that I should not go into that area, and so I don't. And, you know, that also comes with time.
Oh, yes.
And a maturity. And as I said, this is the kind of work that is, well, it's very blessed work. But, there were incidents that I had as a young child that gave me information about other people and things. And my mama just kind of said I wasn't able. She said, you couldn't know that about people, you know. And so after a while, I learned to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, well, you know, that is discernment, because there have been times earlier, years ago,
yes,
that Doris and I, we knew something about people, but we didn't say anything because we felt that we would get them into trouble or into situations which they would not be able to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very true. And but I think there's also more of an openness. I know I had a conversation with a cousin, and I talked to him about this. He said, well, how do you know it's not the devil? And I said, well, or evil.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's very simple. By the fruits you know them. If what I do mm-hmm. makes me a better person,
mm-hmm.
Makes me more kind, loving, and caring,
mm-hmm.
then I know it's the good work.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, right. So if that's what it is, then you can follow it. But he said, well, he was talking about being tripped by the devil, and I said, well, I'll be honest, I've never looked under my bed to see if there were a burglar or a devil under there.
Well, you know, we had the same comments, you know.
Really?
And I have been wondering, why are the people so attached to the devil rather than being attached to God?
Yes.
Why is it that the first thing they think, oh, this must be from the devil? And I'm just wondering, but I'm seeking the truth.
Exactly.
And the truth comes from God.
Absolutely. And as I said, if good comes from it, if what we're doing causes us to grow and stretch and reach and become more loving, then we know it has to be of God. It has to be. I mean, that's just the way it is. And also, my feeling is if you keep running around looking for something, you're going to find it.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, yes.
If you want to find the devil and you're worried about the devil coming into your life, or evil, however you would prefer to put it, then definitely that's what's going to show up, because you're putting energy into calling that into your life by your fear.
Oh, yes, that's right. And talking about fear, you know, when my family had to escape. After the Nazis had occupied the Norway, they one day they came and confiscated the three stores we had.
Right.
Their summer villa, their bank accounts.
Right.
Their inventory in the stores and everything. And in a week later, they had to flee. Otherwise, they would have been taken and sent to Germany, to a concentration camp.
Right.
But here, you know, talking about fear, here they had nothing. Everything was stripped away from them.
Yes.
And they had only their clothes on their back.
Right.
And they had help from the underground, and they escaped. There were 11 children in
mm-hmm.
my family.
Right.
And fortunately, all of them came through the war without a scratch.
Isn't that miraculous?
And throughout this ordeal, my family, of course, me too, we had the courage to survive.
Yes.
And that was all there was to do.
Right.
Know? And one sister was in a concentration camp. On three occasions, they were going to send her to Auschwitz, which
mm-hmm.
was an extermination camp.
Mm-hmm.
And three times they were taking off the train.
Wow.
Because they had become Swedish citizens.
Ah.
That's all, they were taken off their train. But all through that time, we had the, like I said, the courage to survive and to do what was right.
Oh, that's marvelous. We are run out of time, I'm afraid.
Oh, really?
Well, no, we have a few minutes more, just a few minutes more, but not a whole lot. So is there some way people can contact you and, you know, to talk to you, or what information would you like to pass along to our listeners?
Well, they can get the books. They can buy the books.
Okay.
And they can buy this last book, Courage to Survive.
Right.
They can get it on the Amazon.com.
Okay.
Or go to the bookstore and you can order it there. The other two, Holiday in Heaven and the book...
On Wings of the Spirit?
Yeah, you can order that from Ozark Mountains Publishing.
Okay.
And the phone number here, there is 1-800-935-0045.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent. Do you have a website?
Yes. It is ardo@tampabay.rr.com.
Okay. That's your email, right?
Yeah. That's
okay.
That's...
But do you have a website on top of a different one, a website?
No, I don't have it. Not anymore. I used to.
Okay.
But it was difficult to keep up with it and everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Well, they can reach you then through the email. How wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We do have just a couple more minutes. I'm going to just give my information. Again, I'm Phyllis Pricer. You can reach me at my office at area code 202-387-2080. And the email is psychicworlds, and that's a capital P and a capital W with a number 4, psychicworlds4, at AOL.com. I'm always glad to hear from you. If you have questions, anybody who would like to talk this evening, I think we've all been fascinating with what you had to say. I mentioned that sometimes it does happen. People don't call in. They are too interested listening to what's being said, and they don't want to interrupt.
Good. That's fine.
That's wonderful. It's been so much fun having you. And I think I've learned some things as well from you, and exploring the different things that we do in our lifetime, because being called to different services is how the world goes around and turns around. The job that you did took a great deal of dedication and selflessness.
Thank you, yes.
And you had to give up a great deal.
Yes.
In your life,
yes.
To do this work and to do it the way that you and your wife thought was best. And you also had with you an angel in disguise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's your lovely wife who has been by your side.
Yeah. And also, in conclusion, I'll say,
yes,
to do this kind of work that you and I are doing and what I was doing, it is a lonely job.
Oh, yes, it is.
Because you have to just about shut yourself off from the world and do the work that you are called to do.
Yes.
So don't expect to be on its stage every week for millions of people. You will be very lonely, but you're doing their work which God has called you to do.
And that's very true. It can be very lonely. You're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's something that is a calling, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And you will know that that you are doing the right thing at the right time. You will know. Nobody else can tell you.
Right.
But, and you will have to use your own
judgment,
discernment,
right,
and wisdom as it comes to you.
Right. It's not easy, and there are times when you question yourself, and you question your not so much your integrity, but you question your sanity. At least, a lot of times in the beginning, I just wondered about my brain. You know,
join the club. That's for sure. You wonder, am I doing the right thing?
Yes.
Am I in the right field?
Yes.
And what if I make mistake? Well, you know, if you make mistake, God will correct you.
You don't really have to worry about that too much.
And nobody is perfect. Nobody.
Well, not here on the earth plane, anyway.
Oh, no, that's for sure. That's been such a nice time to talk to you.
Oh, it's been a joy. Yeah. I've been looking forward to this for some time, and I'd love to have you back again.
Well, sure.
Because you're a wonderful speaker.
Well, thank you.
You have so much to share, and I'm sure that those who have been listening have gotten a lot of information, because people, as I say, tend to think that this is a glamorous field.
Oh, no.
It really isn't.
Well, in one way it is glamorous because you're helping people. That you're going to be famous, that's so far down the line it isn't even funny.
Right.
But if you're doing the right thing, then in my estimation, it is glamorous, even if nobody else knows about it.
That's true. It's I wouldn't use the word glamorous. I would say it's very satisfying. It's like being in the health field,
yes,
like a nurse.
Yes.
You are helping the spiritual life of the beings.
Oh, yes.
And that is very important. I think more and more also in our world today, we are understanding that it is highly important to help the spiritual heal in order to affect a true physical healing.
Right.
That the mind and the body are together, and you can no more separate them than you can say, you know, your foot is not a part of the rest of your body, therefore you don't have to take care of it.
Sure.
But and because I've been in the healthcare field, that's why that's kind of a simile that I would use very, very quickly, because that leaps to mind. But I believe more and more people are understanding that it is important, and this is part of healing the spirit, which then moves into the emotions and then finally moves into the physical body.
Yes, that's right. And if you can heal the spirit or the soul, then everything else will be healed.
Yes.
But it starts with the knowing that,
yes,
somebody is there to help you.
No. Oh, and the other thing is, also, you always have guides and guardians to help you.
Oh, yes.
And you don't really have to be concerned about being out in left field with no one else loving you and caring for you and helping you do the work. There are always those guides and guardians from other realms who are your helpers. That's what they volunteer to do.
Whether you like it or not, you have guardian angels around you every day. And the guardian angel is there to help you, to correct you, whether you like it or not.
That's true, too.
Yeah,
I know. Sometimes I ask them to please lighten up, or, you know, would you go help somebody else for a little while? I think I've had enough help for today.
But
you do have those who help. And I'm glad you mentioned, too, the changing of the guard, as I call it, when you have other people or other, when you've grown so far in a certain direction, then other guardians or guides come in to help you grow simply more.
Of course. Oh, yes. Yeah. And just to see, just because when you die,
yes,
you don't know everything on the other side.
Absolutely.
You will be just as smart or dumb as when you were on Earth.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and so when you go to the other side,
yes,
it's another a continuation,
yes,
of life.
Well, we have been beat, so that means we have to say good night.
Oh, good night.
Well, thank you so much again. God bless you. We'll be talking to you and being in touch, you and I. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you and good night. God bless. And we wish all of you love, abundance, and happiness. Again, Aaron, thank you, and my love to your beautiful wife.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Good night, everyone.